Welcome to this episode of the Comedy Defect Podcast. My name is Winter, I'm a comedian, and this is my show. Those that are new to the show, welcome. Those that are old to the show, thanks for coming back, guys. This is episode 107, and I'm sorry this has taken so long to release, but the thing was, after I recorded about these 20 episodes during the lockdown, I just had to experience some life. I've been hammering away at comedy for over 10 years, and I just thought, you know what, I need to experience something to feed my comedy brain. And I just had to take a bit of a break. I still ran my gigs, but I just had to kind of like just ease off a small bit and go and experience some stuff. And so when I went fell for leather and everything, I go full bore and everything, I broke both my legs. And to record in the studio, it's a very slippery path out to the studio, so I had to take a break. But during my stay in hospital and at home, we'll get into that another time, I edited all 20 episodes because I couldn't face them. I put so much work into everything, and I just had to, even during lockdown, I'm a bit of a workaholic, and I just didn't stop. And so when everything eased, I was still in work mode. And I was just like, okay, I need to just break this and kind of, and I just, okay, right, now I'm in living mode. And I went full out at that as well. And that's the kind of personality I am, really. I just didn't stop. So having two broken legs has calmed me down an awful lot. It's humbled me. I have edited all these 20 episodes that these people kindly spent an hour or so of their time with me talking to them about comedy. It's wonderful. I hope you enjoy them. This episode is 107, as I say, with an excellent comedian, Don Biswas. He is tearing up the comedy scene. He's closed a couple of nights for me. And if you haven't seen him, go and check him out. He's a brilliant joke writer, and he has just got a wonderful comedic mind. And he's just a treat to go and see, as I say. He is on all the social medias. He's on TikTok. He's on Don Biswas Comedy on TikTok and Instagram. There's a couple of lovely bits of magic in the 20 episodes that I recorded during the lockdown, and I hope you enjoy them as much as I enjoyed recording them. And there's a couple of nuggets of information about comedy in this episode as well, and I hope you find them, and I hope you use them, and it helps you develop your stuff as well. And I just got to say, I'm really sorry this has taken so long to come out, but, you know, life gets in the way sometimes. Life humbles you. Life shows you what you need to finish before you move on to the next thing. All I'll say is this: you can find Don on all the social medias, Don Biswas Comedy, and I was on TikTok and Instagram as well. And if you like this podcast enough and you want to follow us, we're on Instagram. It's Winter Dominus. And we're on Facebook as well, The Comedy Defect Podcast. We have a Facebook page and a group. Go like it, go join it. And you know what, right? I just post up the episodes there. Nothing too crazy. And you can also find it on YouTube as well if you want it playing in the background. But if you want to give us a coffee, buy us coffee, you can. It's all right. I can buy my own coffee. But sure, if you like it that much, just show your appreciation. And or else, if you can't even afford that, times are hard, just share your favorite episode. Tells people where we are and what we're up to. That's all the spiel out the way. This is a great episode with a wonderful comedian, Don Biswas. Enjoy. Don Biswas, welcome to the Comedy Defect. How are you doing, man? What have you been up to?
Thanks very much for having us. I'm doing okay in the middle of a pandemic, just writing bits of new material, recording TikToks and all that.
You forayed into the TikTok world and just sort of, how's that going?
It's going well. It's quite hard to figure out how to get more followers, but I'm just talking about myself and having dyspraxia for those who don't know. It's something that affects my coordination and organisation and the difficulty. So yeah, I've been talking about that mainly on TikTok.
And how long are those videos?
They're about a minute. A minute is the most you get on TikTok. So you get a choice of a minute or 15 seconds.
You're getting loads of likes and views, and people just following you, or what's going on?
I'm getting some likes and views, not too much, but it's early days yet.
So, yeah, like
so
everything.
I'm getting about 100 free likes, and so I don't know how many views exactly, but it's early days. So
that's good, man. That's still good. It kind of snowballs, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I just got to persevere with it.
Been putting some jokes on, or just talking about your dyspraxia?
First of all, I started with just doing, like, it's a lip-syncing act, so I've just been lip-syncing songs. So, first of all, I danced as Bez from the Happy Mondays in Step On. So, yeah. I thought I'd play that while dancing like Bez.
Cool.
And then I did a Celine Dion.
Nice.
Lip-sync, so yeah, and just stuff like that. Then I did Mick Jagger with the Rolling Stones, Start Me Up. So, I just So they've got about 300 views each, so that's not too bad.
That's good.
I just started talking about the dyspraxia.
Throw stuff out there and see what works, isn't it, really? You know, what trying to find your crowd.
Exactly. I've seen other comics do about their learning difficulties and gain a few views. as a cynical move, you know, why don't I do this?
Why not, man? Look, you've got to, look, they want to put you in a box, man. It's like, you just got to try and, like, you know, market yourself as best you can, isn't it, hey?
Exploit it.
Yeah.
I mean, the weird thing is, there's a comedian called Andrew O'Neill, very good comedian, said that they don't look for the best comedians necessarily, they look for the most marketable ones.
What can we do with you? What can we sell you? How long have you got left in your life, basically? It's all comes down to boils down to, like, you know, how much money can you make for them, isn't it, hey?
What formats? TV, radio, talk show, yeah. Whatever.
Exactly, man, exactly. So, like, you got an agent this year, didn't you? Just gone, is that right?
Yeah, I got the back of last year. I signed up with Adam Rushton.
That's great, man.
A rush of laughter. I appreciate for him for choosing me. So, yeah, I'm really pleased with that. So,
like, we after 13 years of being on the circuit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's taken me ages, but
brilliant. No, just I'm not saying it like it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that
no. You know, perseverance is a great thing. Just keep going, and even if you've got an agent, you still have to put the hard graft in yourself and make sure you write the material, get the opportunities there for Adam to help you with.
The lockdown, has it slowed you down at all, or you just managed to kind of keep chipping away, or?
I just keep chipping away. I mean, when it comes to the writing, I don't bother writing. I never write on a pen and paper. There's no point.
Yeah.
I just write as it comes to me, because if the more I think about it, the more I worry about it, and I get writer's block. So, and no one knows who I am. I've got 13 years of material, so I can get over an hour and a half of material of jokes and gags, plus what I've already got about the pandemic as well. So I can just keep building. So there's no, I'm letting it grow organically. And that's how the jokes fall out. So.
Have you written a Corona show, or like have you got a name for the show, or like along those that theme, or is it just politics? Because that's what you mainly do, isn't it? A political comedian.
Yeah, I called my show in the Edinburgh Fringe "Left Wing Conspiracy Theories with Dyspraxia," and my work in progress "Left Wing Conspiracy Theories with Dyspraxia 2." So
sequel.
So I might just do that and then add the word Corona on it, because I've got a lot of stuff questioning the lockdown, a lot of one-liners about it. Yeah, so. I'm just seeing where I can take it. I've got to apply for the Guildford Fringe. You reminded me. Yeah, I've got to apply for the Guildford Fringe. So if I can take it out later this year, some of the Corona stuff, that'd be great.
Is it going to be online, or is it actually going to be physically there?
Well, I'm trying to look for online gigs, but if things start to open up, hopefully a socially distanced gig physically there.
Yeah, fingers crossed, man. Do you remember the exact date you started on?
Well, comedy?
Yeah.
I did my first gig. It was like officially, I think it was about the 4th of November, 2006. Then I started taking it seriously in 2007.
Right.
Not seriously, but then I started gigging regularly.
And where was that, and who was that for?
That was in 2006. That was for the Bedford in Balham, which ran a pro night called the Begana Cabaret.
Nice.
And this was just a new act night with Ed Balls, rest in peace. Australian guy, very good MC, promoted the night, got a lot of people in. And yeah, and this gave, it was just predominantly new acts, and he gave me a chance. I went to an open mic night with my sister at the same place a few months earlier, and her boss was having a go as a laugh, as a sort of like a bet. And I thought I could do that. I wrote a couple of jokes at university. And then 3 months later, after signing up, yeah, I was on stage.
What did you do?
I did a degree in business studies at the University of Liverpool.
Right.
And for people that know, if anyone watched the Indian program, sketch show, goodness gracious me,
great.
Business studies is what thick Asians study. If you're clever, you're a doctor or an engineer or something like that.
But yeah, right.
I just chose a very broad degree.
Right.
And that's it. Just thought, stick with it.
So like, is business studies the media communications course of the white demographic?
100%, yes. Although media and communications is important because you learn about the media more than ever. Because they're such powerful institutions, where business studies is just useless. I never learned how to set up my own business, really. Just a little bit about accountancy, and that was it, and marketing.
I mean, Excel is a vital part of comedy, really, for the booking forms, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was speaking to this to another comic, Andy Story. Check him out. He's a great comic.
Great.
He was on a banking advert, I think it was. Forgot
Nationwide,
was.
Wasn't it?
Nationwide, brilliant, yeah. And he says that a lot of comedians don't have any other skills. Mm. I mean, I've been sacked from every job I ever had.
Right.
And comedy is the only thing I could do. I have a part-time job pushing a trolley for a living in a post room. Promoters tend to have a go at comics who can't fill in these expert sheets or booking forms. But most of these comics I've come across who are great comics literally cannot do anything else. They have got not the skill set, the social skills. Comedy is the only thing they can do. So if they didn't do comedy, they'll be probably, I don't know, 6 feet under or something.
Yeah, it's the thing that saved them, isn't it, really?
Pretty much.
I think that's the comedy building that self-awareness of, you know, of your person, of your own personality can really save you from becoming an absolute nightmare in society. I know some people you might see on the circuit, it doesn't seem that way, but imagine what they would be like if they didn't have comedy at all.
Imagine the havoc that would cause in society.
Yeah.
And I think having dyspraxia for me and being a comic have both been a get out of jail free card out the rat race.
Brilliant.
It's been brilliant.
So you've been sacked from loads of jobs then. What's your worst job?
Technically, I only got sacked from one job as an admin assistant. Mm. No, but I say more than one job because it adds for the comedic effect.
Exaggerate slightly, of course.
Exaggerate it. Well, actually, I've been sacked from two jobs, actually. I got sacked when I was 16. I couldn't sell double glazing.
Mm, right.
But I got sacked as an admin assistant, active consultancy, which is like bed letter day. And then I had to leave a management trainee position before that. I would have got sacked at Superdrug. And that's when And that's when I started to get really depressed because I didn't know what was wrong with me. I couldn't hold down just a low paid job.
Yeah, that's it. Like you're kind of going, well, where have I got left? You know, that's it. I mean, it's tough. I remember I got sacked, my first job, I got sacked. Like it was admin as well, admin assistant as well in Norfolk Constabulary in Wyndham. And it was like the big police station there. And I was like, I had never worked in an office before. And oh, mate, I was just like out of my depth big time. There was a big drive on for, I was in HR as well, really busy. And I was like in HR. So they were putting a big drive on for policemen that the 2 weeks that I was there. So I was photocopying all these police packs for these applicants to fill out. And fuck it, didn't I miss out like half of the pack in the fucking goddamn thing? I sent out hundreds of these things, man. And I was just like, every day I was like, oh man, I've got to come in today. And like, there'll be a mess answer machine with like about fucking another 60, 70 messages on it, you know? Kind of go, oh, can I have the police pack, you know? Or I'm missing this part of the pack. I mean, so they had to send out again. They called me into a room. All these admin guys who have a police sort of like badge on a card, you know, I was like, oh, this isn't for a promotion. They're like, gonna have to let you go, Winter. Oh man, I was gutted. Like, I was like, maybe I was thinking to myself while I was there, I was like, maybe I could be a policeman. I mean, I'm on the inside, I could get one because even the admin guys had actually had a badge. I was like, well, you're not even a policeman, you've got a badge. I want a badge, you know. So, mate, I feel the pain, man. With like, I've had some terrible jobs, man. I worked in a quiche factory, I worked in a fish factory. Yeah, you know, some great stories at least, man. Like, you know, oh man, I've done nearly anything for money. Like, you know, it's just, you got to do it. But that's the comedy, right? That's the comedy, man.
Yeah, you worked at a fish factory during lunch and then by dinner you're working in the quiche factory.
Well, yeah, that's it. Just
And then you're working the Weetabix in the morning.
Mate, that's it. Something for breakfast. That's it. It's like some sort of diet, you know? That's
going
it.
Through the jobs. Oh, I think loads of comics have gone through that where they've just, I heard a story about Rosie Holt. She got sacked from a temporary role because a fellow comic, because she fell asleep. So yeah, I've heard loads of horror stories with comics, and that's why we do comedy. Can't do anything else.
I mean, you've been on like loads of TV at this stage, haven't you, Don?
I've done one piece of TV. I did the British Asian Network, and
yeah.
I was lucky enough last year to do Radio 4 called the 13 Million Club, because it's a disabled show, and 13 million disabled people out there in the UK, hence the title.
Yeah,
and I was lucky enough to do about 5 minutes of stand-up on it, and it went really well, luckily.
Great.
And that's because I've done well, but it's because of the 13 years experience behind me.
Yeah, so of course.
I was ready for it.
You built up your foundation and off you go, man.
Yeah, I've let it grow organically, and some people rush too early. And yeah, you know, I first of all started as a one-liner merchant, and I didn't know what type of comic I wanted to be until I was about 7 years in.
Mm.
And some people find their voice straight away. I've got the natural persona and stuff like that. I never had that, especially being slightly autistic. It means that I never had a natural stage presence and stuff like that. So I had to work hard at that.
With that first gig, do you remember the first joke you wrote?
I was a Liverpool Football Club fan.
Yeah.
It was a terrible joke. How many light bulbs does it take Rafa Benitez to change? And the joke line is one, but make sure he doesn't change it every week. Because he changed the team every week at the time. So
great.
It got a few laughs, but it was a terrible joke looking back at it. Though.
But it's the beginning, isn't it? That's it. It's allowed to be, man. That's it. You got to build up from something. You can't just go be brilliant straight away.
No. Some people are, though. I've met some people. About that time, or a bit before me, Sean Roll started, and he was absolutely brilliant straight away. He got signed up. But that's very rare. So
I think they have a background in some sort of performance beforehand. maybe.
I don't know about Sean, he might do, or he just naturally, but yeah, a lot of them who pick up quickly are teachers or something, or drama students.
Yeah, teachers is a very common one, isn't it? Like, you know, because of that organized lesson plan. Here, guys, this is what we're doing. They've got crowd control skills already.
100%.
Yeah, that's it, man.
And actors and actresses as well. So yeah. Like Aislinn Bea, I think she started very quickly because she had that acting background. Same with Jack Whitehall as well. He's always an actual performer because he'd been doing it since he was a kid.
That's it, man.
Acting, so...
Yeah, so like, I mean, you've been gone 13 years, man. Like, what is your worst gig you've ever done?
I've done quite a few. I did a gig once where it was a black comedy night, urban night, in Temple. It was a walkabout, and I just got booed off stage. She did not like my stuff.
Oh.
And a woman just took me off stage. After that, I went to the Comedy Zor Gong Show, and I lasted about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Two bad gigs in one night, yeah. The first urban comedy night, the black comedy night, there was like 300 or 400 people booing me.
Oh, that's so tough, man. And you went, but at least you went, that you're hardened from that previous gig to go to the Comedy Store on that same night. You've got a bit of like armor. Like, well, you know what, right? At least you're not booing me off like this.
Well, yeah, I just enjoyed it doing so much. I was addicted to it.
Yeah,
so
of course.
When the gigs went, they were brilliant. But when they went bad, they went really bad. But I thought, you know, I booked for this. I might as well just go along anyway.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
That's it, man. You got to just, you know, get through it, man. That's it. You just got to keep getting up there.
100%. Yeah. And that's perseverance. That's all. I think the biggest thing you need in comedy is perseverance.
Yeah.
And I've been talking about this a lot. The second biggest thing you need is confidence.
Yeah.
Confidence is so important. And I think a lot of people who do well in society, I mean, going off topic here, even in comedy, are privately educated people.
Yeah.
Because they've had that huge confidence installed in them. What they're saying or what the content of their product, whether they're a comedian or politician, may not be the greatest, but because they've had that confidence installed in them from the get-go, it's just given them an advantage.
That self-belief, isn't it? I mean, that's 100%. The thing. I think a lot of people arrive to comedy because they have a real lack of self-worth and they're trying to, maybe I'll speak for myself here, but
Same here.
You know, I was like, at the beginning, I was like, oh man, I need this. You know, this feels like a little bit of my soul and like, you know, hopefully I'm getting love from the audience to build it up. But after a while, gradually you get topped up and it stays there with you and you're like, okay. And it could be with age and also with just experience. You're like, oh no, I'm good at something. And then that is the first step to liking yourself, isn't it? You're like, and then you kind of like, and of course you can become bitter along the way too, a little bit. I know I'm right with this joke.
Exactly, 100%. It's just the age and experience. I mean, I'm 37 years old. It's like for the first time in my life, I've been comfortable in my own skin and myself as a comic. And that's just through age and experience. And I've become a lot more confident. There's no point being cocky, but I know I'm a half decent gag writer. So, and I can make audiences laugh. So, and obviously I have the odd bad gig, but you know, it's 13 years experience. I've just become more confident.
With your like, you know, comedy career, is it a career? Is it just like a kind of like a living your life and having gigs along the way? Because the career is a plan, isn't it, really? But you know, it's just, that's what I feel. It's like, you call it a career. It's just like, oh, I've managed to have been lucky enough to have these opportunities, isn't it? Your career, your comedy opportunities, if you like. What is the height of your comedy career? I've used the word opportunities, if you like.
Well, first of all, like, it's still a hobby, but I can call it a career. I mean,
For you, like, as you went, oh, you know what, now that was, you know, I've you know, you kind of like not pat yourself on the back so much, but like, oh, you know what, right, that's, I'm pleased with this. I'm pleased with where I'm at right now. This is, I've done this, you know, I've done it. I got to here.
Yeah, probably although I'm not a full-time professional, but most people aren't during the pandemic, it's probably when I did some disability corporate gigs, Asperger's. That went really well. I got flown out to America.
Oh, amazing.
And then obviously doing the Radio 4 as well last year. So, yeah, I got a really good response from that. So those are the things.
And the corporate with the corporate with the Asperger's, is that right? Asperger's? Asperger's,
yeah.
A dyspraxia gig. Where was that?
Oh, that was for Google, and that was in, that was Silicon Valley.
Amazing.
It was near San Francisco, Silicon Valley, and New York. And nice. I was hesitant to do it at first because I'm an old school lefty comic. But then I thought to myself, if worse comes to worse, I've got family to support me. I'm extremely lucky in that position. But as a comedian who's not making great deals of money at that time, I thought I might as well take this opportunity.
Brilliant.
You know, if I was earning, like Bill Hicks said, if I was a comedian earning millions of pounds or thousands of pounds a year from doing comedy, then yeah, maybe I wouldn't have taken the opportunity, but because I was just starting out getting the paid gigs, I thought this is a wonderful opportunity to take. And yeah, obviously I can teach people about dyspraxia and Asperger's.
Great, man. That's brilliant. Was that streamed around the world as well, or?
No, it was just for the, it was in 2018, so it was just for the staff inside. So.
Wow. So that was like, that was 12 years into your career.
Yeah, about 11 years into my career. Wow. Yeah.
So. That's great. That's great, man. So it takes a long time, isn't it? You know, like to just to kind of get, or the confidence that people have in you to kind of go, well, you know, and then fly you out to there. How did you meet? Did you meet someone that kind of got you onto that, or how did that transpire?
There's a very good prop comedian, and he's a great one-liner writer, Steve Best.
Yeah.
He's a photographer. Brilliant. And he saw me in 2010.
Yeah.
And he was a producer of Abnormally Funny People.
Right.
Who run gigs for people with disabilities,
yeah,
difficulties, and like both physical, mental, and learning difficulties as well. So, and he saw me and he just gave me a chance and said, just email us. And then I got a 10-minute spot at Soho Theatre, or five-minute spot. And it just went on from there. I had good jokes at the time. I wasn't the best. If you looked at the mainstream work, I was far from the best. Definitely no way near. I'm not the best now, but you know, I was far from where I wanted to be.
Hmm.
But because on the disability circuit, there wasn't that much competition. So,
yeah.
And I had a half-decent gag that helped me. So.
Great, man. That's great. Steve Best is such a great guy as well. And amazing.
Lovely guy,
brilliant
lovely
comic
guy.
Too. Brilliant. Oh, that's brilliant.
He's a bona fide headliner everywhere he is. It's just, it's a shame because of the pandemic and stuff, the way the comedy industry turned. 20 years ago, I'd be a full-time professional and Steve Best would be headlining everywhere around the world.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's different times now.
Yeah, it's true, man. That's true. That's brilliant, man. So San Francisco first and then New York. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. All with Google.
All with Google,
that's
yeah.
great. And there were fun gigs to do?
Yeah, they were fun. I was doing less of a gig. I was doing more of a speech because they're worried about the content, but I was doing funny speech.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were lovely. It was just a great experience just to go out there. It's just nothing like I've seen. I was nervous beforehand. There were fun gigs to be, but I was nervous beforehand. I think I could have done better, but overall they seemed happy. So yeah.
So. We can always do better. That's the thing, isn't it? It's never finished, is it? Like,
no, 100%. All this drive for more, but.
That's it. But like I mean, is it available online? Can we, or have you recorded it?
No. I haven't recorded it. Another milestone is I did a gig for the Labour Party conference in 2019.
Yeah.
And that felt like a moment. And you can watch that online as well.
Great.
So after that gig, I got a lot of gigs for the Labour Party during the 2019 election. And at every constituency I gigged at for the Labour Party during the elections, they lost their seat.
Oh, no.
So it wasn't Corbyn, it was me. So,
So hopefully, well, you never know. Potentially no repeat bookings.
No, not for the Labour Party.
Maybe they will book you again because most of those people will be gone, won't they? They won't be able to book you again.
Now, I've been lucky enough to keep the gigs. I've been doing them through the pandemic, which is nice.
That's great.
Labour grassroots, but yeah, nice. I'm a bit of a bad luck charm.
Well, never mind. At least they're laughing on the way out the door. So have you been writing any sketches apart from TikTok?
Yeah, I've been doing some with a guy called Steve Lee, who's got a great character called Mad Rodden.
Yes, of course.
Which is Uxbridge's third hardest man.
Hmm.
So he's like a, I don't want to not do it justice, but he's like a Phil Mitchell type character.
Yeah, that's right.
He's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, and he's helped me write some sketches for being just stuff that my agent Adam has sent me, like to apply for BBC Three, do sketches here, talk about, I don't know, being dyspraxic and stuff like that.
Great.
So just sending off speculatively and hopefully something can come out of it.
That's it, man. Like you just gotta keep throwing stuff at the wall until something like lands.
Exactly, 100%. Mm. And also I've been just writing one-liners and sharing them to my Facebook pages and Twitter.
God be done, man. See what works out there. And so Steve Lee's great as well. He's a great comic too. He's like a character comedian, isn't he? Brilliant.
Yeah, he's brilliant. And he's only been going for years. He's absolutely brilliant. He's got that character absolutely nailed on.
So when you first started, who was the person you were like, oh my God, I love this comic. I want to be like this comic. But this is the thing I'm looking towards.
Well, when I first started, Milton Jones had been going for quite a few years. And I started as a one-liner merchant. And because I was a bit autistic, I wasn't very good with the stage presence. I made myself a little bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the set from 2009 Comedy Store Gong Show, where I just said thank you after every one-liner and I had my hair up, a bit like Milton Jones.
Yeah.
And I did a gig with him at the Comedy Store and it felt like that I was just open spot. It felt like I was stealing his act.
Yeah.
I hadn't found my original voice then, but it was a bit like the persona of Milton Jones and Stephen Wright, just very deadpan, and just
slow
laughing out one-liners. Yeah,
when you love comedy and you like love that act, it's really hard to pull away from that, especially when you've got nothing else to lean on, isn't it?
At the very beginning. 100%. I see it so many times now. So many acts before the pandemic were being like James Acaster.
Oh yeah,
and it's understandable. He's the hot comic at the moment.
Walking on their knees.
Yeah, exactly. 10 years ago it was Stuart Lee, now it's James Acaster.
Yeah, I mean, like I saw some guy in Berlin do an entire amazing one-liner comic.
Mitch Hedberg.
Thank you, Mitch Hedberg, him. He did nearly his whole act. I was like, and they loved it. The audience loved it, but they didn't know. I was like, oh my God. And it so frustrated me. The guy came up to the promoter afterwards and went, how did I do? I was like, Mitch Hedberg did well.
You'll always get found out.
That's it, man. You got to be very, very careful. Write your own jokes, man. Don't be stealing stuff. You know, it takes a long time.
Or just rip off some really, really obscure comic.
Yeah, that's
it. That no one knows of, like Def Jam 91 or something.
Yeah. So what do you do when you're not doing comedy then?
I work 3 days a week in a post room. So yeah. I've been extremely lucky just to supplement my income and most of my money. And it's an easy enough job. So, you know, you're saying earlier that comics can't do much more. Mm. But this is just me pushing a trolley, delivering mail and booking a couple of stuff. So it's been really helpful.
Have you managed to write any jokes about it?
Yeah, I've done some jokes, but just really stock jokes. Like I work as a porter, mailroom porter, part-time. Mm. Hopefully I can work one day full time and give up the stand up comedy.
Yeah, nice.
So just like really hack jokes, but I haven't done many jokes. For my set, I talk about work in the supermarket because trolley and supermarket go together more. So I've embellished it. So I do this joke, which is similar to a Stephen Wright one, where he said, I come to the supermarket and my mum said, when you work at the supermarket, don't let any of our middle class Indian friends know that you work at a supermarket. So when you push the trolley, just say you're doing a little bit of shopping, that's all. A little bit of shopping. Unfortunately, what gives the game away is the fact I'm pushing 30 fucking trolleys in a row.
It's lovely, man. That's a lovely joke. That's a lovely gag. I love it. Was it Stuart Francis as well?
Yeah, I used to like him, but now I think he's a great comic. But I just think with one-liner merchants, when they first start out as the best because that's the material they've had for years.
Yeah,
it's like with a load of comics. Like I think Mickey Flanagan's first DVD was the best because he's honed that material for years.
Yeah,
especially one-liner merchants. So
I think the
difference with people like Jimmy Carr and Frankie Boyle, who are also one-liner type guys, although slightly different Frankie Boyle, they got a lot of writers to help them.
Yeah.
I liked Stuart. I preferred when he first came out.
It's like pure, isn't it? Like pure him. Like that's it. The thing that was fully him. And then it gets diluted a bit because the other people has write for them, as you say.
Yeah, that's just, I heard that Milton Jones has got writers, but with Stuart Francis as well, he's taking his time to write that material, that first hour. The second hour, you know, obviously he can wait another 15 years to write another hour. So he has to hurry up a little bit.
It'd be nice if you had that time, wouldn't it? Like, oh, you know, write another one in 15 years, it'd be grand. That's fine.
Yeah. No one's going to give you that, are they?
Not at all, man. Like, come on, we want the next thing now. We need the next thing.
But one thing I do agree with is like, I don't understand why people do shows every year in Edinburgh. Mm. I think Edinburgh's going to change after the pandemic. Less people are going to go afterwards. Because in America, they apparently take 3 years to write an hour. So we don't need to do it every year. I mean, you can if you want to, but I think sometimes it's a bit pointless. I think you just let it grow organically a little bit. Don't try and force it all the time.
Yeah, that's it. It's a danger, isn't it? You know, you kind of like go up to Edinburgh. Some people go up to Edinburgh, got 5 minutes, and they do like half an hour. You're like, man, you haven't got 5 minutes yet.
Exactly. Very. Even like some of the top pro comics, they probably have one or two Edinburghs where they were not ready. So
that's it, man. And you can't be new twice. You can only be new once.
Exactly.
You colour their vision of you, and you're like, oh, okay, great. Well, will I ever get out of this box? It's going to take a long time to get out of that box. So, you know, it's, but yeah, you've got some great quotes, man. You've got like this one, by the quality of his jokes alone, including a choice one about a corporate gig for the DWP, Biswas is the show's star turn. The Guardian, man. That's a great quote you got there.
It was the Wimbledon Guardian, so...
Don't ruin it. I'm going to cut that out. It's the Guardian.
No, someone else said that to me. I got a quote from the Guardian as well.
Yeah.
The Wimbledon Guardian. It was a funny comic. But I was really pleased with that, yeah.
That's great, so, man. You got loads of... Broadway Baby is really, like, you know, you've got some great quotes coming up, man. Have you only had any, like, horrific reviews that you've kind of gone, oh, come on?
When I first started, I think this sort of changed my tact in comedy. They said something nice from Chortle. Steve Bennett said that I did get the laughs, but the problem was every joke was a sort of like a hack joke about being Indian. like being a minicab driver. And I think you were spot on. At the end of the day, reviews only one person's opinion, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah, as long as you're getting the laughs, that's the most important thing, and the audience like it. And I discovered comedians like Doug Stanhope and Steve Hughes around about the same time, and I said, I'm just tired. Yeah. I don't just have to talk about being dyspraxic and Indian all the time. I can change it up a little bit. And that's when I got my first back for politics again, so I thought I'd change it up. And maybe having that Steve Bennett review subconsciously made me think that I could do better material than this.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. You got to try and find some common ground, of course, you know, at the beginning, because you're so nervous. And then you're like, okay, once you've got the confidence, you're like, okay, no, I can write good jokes, even though it's within that box. You can just go off piece sort of thing into things you really like, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my political comedy is very gag heavy. So it's everything has a punchline. And I think definitely with politics, because I've got some outlandish opinions. I'm not particularly in favour of a lockdown. I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist. What I do is I make myself the butt of the joke. So like I talk about secret societies, and I just say, if these elites want to meet in secret, they should come to some of my gigs. No one else does. So like that. Yeah. If I make the butt of my joke and be self-deprecating, it's more likely for people to get on my side. They might not like, and even if they don't agree with my politics, hopefully they can laugh at the jokes.
That's it, man. You're also teaching them about stuff they don't know already, but with a gag.
Exactly. Yeah, I think laughter is the best way to do it. Make them laugh first of all, and then hopefully make them think a little bit as well.
That's it. Have you like launched into some sort of podcast yourself on the political side? Because I think this would be very interesting to other people. Look at the Bugle, amazing political podcast.
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't
Andy
it?
Zaltzman. I prefer the first instance, the one with Andy on his own with other guests. I think it just didn't. It's not the same without John Oliver.
No, John Oliver is amazing, but I've seen Andy Zaltzman live. Yeah, I was thinking of doing that, but I just think he had trigonometry as well, so. I don't know where best to put my efforts. It's really hard. Yeah, I was thinking about doing a political podcast, one about conspiracy theories. Maybe I might come back to that. But
yeah,
at the moment, I'm concentrating on TikToks and
right.
jokes on Twitter and stuff like that.
There's plenty to do, isn't there? Like, you know, like on a podcast as well. And then also, like, you know, writing the sketches. There's just, you know, you could just be up all night doing this stuff. And, you know,
it's a minefield. It's great. I'm trying to make better use of my time and make sure I take advantage of all these opportunities. So.
That's it. It's like once one kind of like snowballs, you can surf that one to the next pile of stuff you've got to get through, you know, isn't it? Really, it's like, okay, right, that's fine. That's going now. Plate spinning. We've got the TikTok followers, and they're all okay. Well, now I'm feeding my jokes into that. Direct them towards the podcast. It's basically like an irrigation system for publicity, isn't it? That's what it is.
100%. Yeah. Just hopefully your TikTok followers will come onto Instagram and vice versa. And so, so that's what I'm aiming. So I just got to keep working at it and figure out the algorithms. And,
yeah, man.
See where it goes.
Because you got to be a video editor as well to make it look the best, you know? It's crazy.
It's a different type. It's a completely different. Adrian was talking about getting someone to help all the clients with self-promotion and the social media, because it's a completely different job. So, yeah, it's just the... And I think without sounding harsh, some of the best comics we've made now are probably not the best comics, but know how to use social media the best.
That's it.
Or figure the right algorithms, which is great for them. They're good comics, don't get me wrong, but probably not the best. And they think... I've been a bit of a technophobe, and being dyspraxic, and I don't want to use this as an excuse that... Well, I am going to anyway.
Go for it, mate.
But it's not with social media. I have to reply to Facebook messages, Twitter messages, Instagram messages, TikTok, WhatsApp, Snapchat. So it's like a full-time job. So. Mate,
it's like a nightmare built around your disability, isn't it, really? It's like, what is this? Now that's why the conspiracy's happened, right? Maybe, right? You're like, no, is this all against me? Like, another social... this is starting to become more than a coincidence.
Yeah, well, I make a joke about it. I got sacked as a... admin assistant. I told my dad that I wanted to become a stand-up comic, and he laughed at me. And do you know what I've been doing since then? Updating my website, sending out more emails to promoters, editing my videos. When I wanted to become a stand-up comedian, it turns out what I'd actually become is a fucking admin assistant again.
Oh, Carmen Alley, she has a joke. It's like, you know, I got into comedy because I didn't want to do admin. Now I spend my life just doing comedy admin. That's all I do, you know. That was it. It's so funny, man. It's you can't get away from Excel. So, okay, favourite shortcut on Excel?
I just use Control C,
mate. Copy. Nice, that's it.
That's, I don't know much about Excel. That's a Control V. But I'll tell you one thing ago, we were talking about Steve Best earlier. It was so much easier 20, 25 years ago.
Gotcha.
You could earn like $5,000 a year doing jonglers. There's no social media. So you could be just have sit on the same 20 minutes, yeah? Yeah. And you'll be laughing. The only thing is you obviously might get bored with that 20 minutes, but yeah, you didn't have to do any admin at all. If you're half decent, had a good 20, and yeah, you could earn.
Yeah, you could
the
just
good old days as they used to.
I just saw the sadness in their eyes. I was like, oh, it must have been good. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah, now they can't. They had to retrain. Yeah, it's like that. So mate, I think the comics who've won out are the ones who've continually evolved their material. So
yeah, that's it.
Gone to Edinburgh regularly. Oh, although not just saying you should go every year, but they've gone regularly enough.
Were you funny as a kid, or did you kind of go, right, you know, I want to do that? Or is it just like the scary, I mean, for me, example, it was the scariest thing. I was like, that is the scariest thing to do. I want to see if I can put myself in that and maybe I'll build myself up from that.
For me, it's just, I was a bit of a piss taker at school. So I was a bit of a class clown in terms of I had slanging matches with the teachers.
Yeah.
Especially with the PE teacher, Mr. Daly. But also, I wasn't really good at anything else. But by the time I got my 20s, I was just a really quiet person. I became a bit depressed. I wasn't an actually funny person. I didn't do the comedy because it was scary. I just did it because I had nothing else to do. I just do things without thinking about it. Yeah, if I stick enough shit on the wall, whatever that phrase is, some of it will stick. Yeah, I just did it without thinking about it.
Just jumped in.
Yeah, jumped in. And for the first several years of comedy, without thinking about it, I just did the same set again and again. So I just enjoyed just going out, having a drink, doing a bit of comedy.
Nice.
Socialising a little bit. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, right, okay,
good
cool.
Life. I miss that now because of the pandemic.
Yeah, big time, man. The second lockdown, I was just about hanging in there. I booked a load of gigs, like the gigs I run, and I booked a load of acts for those gigs I run in Abbots Langley and Hemel, and I was like, oh great, we're starting up again. And then the third lockdown hit and I was like, oh man, this is getting ridiculous now. Sadness, you know, just I've been in comedy videos as well, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Nothing beats a live experience.
No, that's it. It's like compared to, I guess, taking meth and drinking a cup of tea. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I've never done meth, but I've seen people that did.
It's so addictive, like they get that rush. Where's your gig in Abbots Langley?
It's in the Hub. There's a community hall there, which
is it near the Unicorn Pub, or is that
is you're in King's Langley there, that's where you are.
King's Langley is not far from is that near Watford, or
that's right, King's Langley, you're talking about the James Beattie's gig, the Unicorn Pub, that's where that gig was, isn't it? That had a really nice that was a lovely little gig, man. I don't think it's not running anymore. The Scottish lady who owns the pub, I rang her up, said, do you want a comedy night? She's like, no, don't want that anymore. I was like, okay, fine, fair enough. So
I did a gig there once and it was tough, and I've been dying loads since then, but luckily that gig went well. And in the second half, someone just shouted, bring back the packy. So yeah, I'm trying to turn that into a punchline. So thanks, Dad. Thanks, Mum. Punchline that. Yeah, so yeah, that's what I remember doing, gigging around that area. But yeah. It was me and Tony Marisa, who doesn't gig as much, but he was naturally one of the funniest guys I've ever met. So,
great,
yeah.
Great comic. I mean, like, he was with Ben Adams there that night as well.
I don't think he was, but I think I gigged with him loads. He was very good. Ben Adams is a great impressionist and he's a great comic actor as well, but don't know whether he's going to come back into comedy or not. But I like gigging. He was a nice guy. So yeah, both of them. Lucky about doing one-liners is in some situations in hard gigs, this is like a get out of jail card because they've got short attention spans.
So you're working and you're doing the TikTok stuff and you're writing the conspiracy. Was it the next show, which is part two? Was it again?
Yeah, because it's just going to do the material I've got, but I'm just going to add the stuff about the pandemic. So and other stuff as well about, you know, woke culture and stuff like that, topics that people are interested in. Yeah, just add as much stuff. I know I keep using this word again, but I'm just going to let it go organically.
Fair. That's it.
Yeah, there's no point trying to push it or anything. And then, trying to, if I can offer a unique perspective, if I can. So.
And what's your conspiracy theory then about the situation at the moment?
I don't think there's a conspiracy theory as such. I got a joke about it, but in 2000, the death rate was 10.4. per 1,000, if you look at statistica.org, and in 2020 it was 10.3 per 1,000. And in 2000 I had a particularly bad flu season. Also in 2019, 530,000 people died in England and Wales, and there's about 600,000 in the year after that. And Dr. Mike Yeardon, who was a chief medical officer or scientific officer at Pfizer, who were doing one of the vaccines, said that the most of the excess deaths were basically down to missed operations and some missed operations. I've never had this pandemic, and I've never had this coronavirus, so I can't sympathize with people on that perspective. But for something that kills less than 1% of the population, I think we should maybe start to open things up and protect the vulnerable, protect the care homes, protect the hospitals. But this is something we might have to live with. And I was speaking to my boss at work today, and he said maybe we just lock down until we get this all at once. But I think we might have to, where the government go, we might have to have stop and start lockdowns again. And maybe if we just don't have that and protect the vulnerable in society and just keep everything else open.
That sounds the most logical and like sane like approach to the whole situation, really. Because like, why is everyone having to lock down? Surely with PPE and, you know, protective measures of like sanitizing everything and all this has protected people from things like Ebola, you know what I mean? Like, and distancing people from that situation. But why is the whole, like in Africa, of course, but like, you know, in why in this country then are we locking everything down? It doesn't make any sense, really.
Yeah, and for me, even though I'm a left winger, it's this right wing notion, it's all about self responsibility, and I agree with that because like, my mum's over 75 and she's got like underlying health conditions. That means I'm not going to go to a hospital and lick a ward full of COVID patients. It's just ridiculous because I need to protect my mum. So if I take self responsibility, as long as I'm not going night out after night, you know, mixing with large groups of people and stuff like that, then it's fine. It's just common sense, self-responsibility. If my mum was really ill, and then maybe we'll have contingency plans where she can self-isolate more. So I just think if individuals take self-responsibility, and if people get infected badly, maybe they didn't take enough self-responsibility. And I know that sounds harsh, but I think we have to be adult about this. For something that kills less than 1% of the population, and don't get me wrong, it's absolutely devastated some hospitals and care homes. No one's denying that. And fit and healthy, fit and young people have died from this or received long COVID. But as again, it's something that kills less than 1% of the population. Maybe it's time to take self-responsibility and open things up.
I totally agree with you. And I think that the people die of ridiculous things every day. Like what, less than 1%? It's like there's people die of cancer, which is more than 1%. There's cancer, it's like 1 in 3 people, isn't it? Die of cancer and stuff. And we're not putting that same amount of energy into that, which is just seems ludicrous.
Treatments and stuff. I mean, the thing is, Dr. Mike Yeardon said, and he said that people will die in hospital of respiratory viruses. I think there's 3 or 4 other types of coronavirus.
Right.
And 1,500 people will die each day, so in hospital or around the country. It's horrific, absolutely, but it's 1% of the population. And the average death rate is 82 years old. And this is what you have to be careful is that this is anyone who's 100,000 people have died, which is absolutely horrific. And the government could have prevented that by locking down the country a bit earlier.
Yep.
But that 100,000 people is anyone who's died, who's tested positive for COVID-19 within the last 28 days. So COVID-19 might have played a small part. It might have played played a big part. So it's not just saying everyone's died of COVID alone. It's just saying who's anyone who's tested positive for COVID.
My mother-in-law, right? She had she's in a care home now, and she tested positive for corona, and then she tested negative, and then she tested positive again. But it's like all these, like, there was something about like the people who were dying in hospital and stuff. They were saying they had died from COVID because they were getting money from the government to finance that death, if you like.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm not about insurance claims. I'm not sure about that, but I heard that in America as well. We need to look at everything. And I know because conspiracy theories, but we know this condition exists. The problem I have is our media not being transparent. Or people have said they're not being transparent with the facts and figures, you know. All I see is blind panic and scaremongering. Of course you should be concerned about it. We've got loved ones who are vulnerable. But we shouldn't be led by blind panic, you know. We should follow the science. I think one of the reasons why Britain has suffered badly is because of prevention. We've got quite an obese country. So maybe if we look after ourselves a little bit more, and it's easier said than done, some people can't afford to do that. But if we just look after ourselves a bit more and make sure that more of our people don't become vulnerable.
Yeah, that's it. It's so many different things. There's so many, an absolute trifecta of shite that's kind of reached us to this point at this moment. Like bad management, bad education about the situation that's going on or how you can protect yourself. And just the blasé attitude of the government really to kind of contribute to the whole thing.
Exactly. I mean, they just recently cut, I think, shut down air travel, and they should have shut down that straight away. Mm. Like other countries like New Zealand at the time, where they could have saved a lot of deaths. And because I agree with the first lockdown, because they could have cut down and saved a lot of deaths. But now, and you know, the number would be a lot lower. But now we're in the third lockdown and maybe thinking, you know, maybe we have to manage this a different way.
Okay, right. So you have your conspiracy theorist, and I agree with the stuff you're saying. It's like, but like, so what do you think if it was like, I know we've talked about like how this is affecting a lot of people, but what did you think is the big picture of this thing if that was your, you know, your conspiracy theorist mind?
Well, this thing, I don't know. They've had this idea of Klaus Schwab, who's the head of the World Economic Forum, and ushering in the Great Reset,
right?
Which is about, it's like the green agenda, which is a great thing, but also having more power for the globalists and stuff like that. I need to look into that fully. So yeah. I don't want to comment with
that. Fine, man. Yeah, that's fine.
No, because of that. But yeah, I think there's something there. But I think if you look at anything, especially with a Tory government. One of the reasons why it's happened the way it is because of big business.
Mm.
Pharmaceuticals are going to make a lot of money. Their friends in government are going to make a lot of money.
Yep.
So I make a joke about it, like not all politicians are bad, because I came friends with a Labour MP and I got solidarity. And then I became with a Tory MP and the minimum I got was a lucrative government contract.
but like the thing is with this is like you think to yourself that like you look at Zoom, didn't Zoom, like all these guys bought into Zoom before the pandemic and like
wow,
then
I never
just,
knew that.
Then it just like shot up and like they made a shitload of money, you know, that's it, like all this kind of these
it's
shares
money,
bought
yeah.
into this. That's it, man.
They have inside the knowledge.
Yeah.
I think also another thing is just the general thing, like after 9/11, which is like erosion of our civil liberties, more powerful governments. It's becoming more draconian and more totalitarian. So it's just basically more governments having control over its citizens or corporations as well. Like it's benefited people like Amazon. So it makes sense whether they're part of the conspiracy or not. It makes sense for a prolonged lockdown because they benefit more, people like Amazon and Google and stuff like that.
That's it. So, for example, I mean, I'm freelance, right? I've been freelance for about 5 years. When I went at comedy full time, I said, right, I'll go at this, right, and go freelance. I can work when I want and gig when I want. And like, luckily, my freelance job, it continues because I can do it from home and stuff. And so, but the thing is, there's so many people and so many shops and stuff have closed because of the situation of the lockdown. It feels to me like that they're like crushing these small businesses and just shutting down all the ones that they can't really control. Like if you're self-employed, you can like put a load of expenses through and stuff for different things, especially being a comedian. Like go up to Edinburgh, you put that through as an expense, you get the money, the bucket money, put that through as well. And it's all this stuff. So in the end, really, you know, you don't pay as much tax because you spend so much to do your art or, you know, pursue your career. And like all this stuff is, there's a new system called the IR35 that's coming in for people who are freelance, is in media or IT and stuff like that, who do contracts. And they basically used to be able to set up a company and they put their money through the company. It's all legal, but what happens is that money goes through a company and they pay themselves a wage. So they end up like with all the expenses and like buying stuff for their job, like laptops, whatever it is. So they put all the money through there and it used to be legal, but now all these big companies will refuse to work that system through their personal company because the government has said, look, this person could be employed by you, so we will take that. We're not going to allow you to work as a self-employed person. You have to be under an umbrella company, so you have to pay PAYE, national insurance, and you do get a pension, but like it's, you're working all the hours, man. It's just it's taken that the benefit of being a freelance person away, you know. So it just you have to go through PAYE. It's crazy.
I mean, it's power. They want more power in a fewer hands, whether it's corporations or governments. And anyone who accused me of being anti-lockdown says that I want the economy to reopen. They've accused me of being pro-big business and stuff like that. But if you continue lockdown, the multinational companies are the ones who win out, the small or medium-sized businesses who are struggling.
Yeah.
I just want to say one other thing about the pandemic here. I'm an idiot. I'm 37 years old. I still live with my mum. I'm an idiot who believes in conspiracy theories. So don't trust anything what I'm saying at all. But the worrying thing is, the science in some of the pandemic is not settled. And it's okay if they censor people like David, like Alex Jones. These are conspiracy theories by their job titles, yeah? Whatever you think of them. But they're censoring people like Dr. Mike Yearden or Carl Hennigan, or even like stations like Talk Radio, which I'm not a big fan of, but that's like, Talk Radio is one of the most mainstream things you can watch. And it's worrying that they're centering people like Mike Yearden, who's got qualifications from, like Dr. Carl Hennigan, who's got qualifications from the University of Oxford. And it's worrying that they're centering educated, learned scholars who've just got a different opinion in this. So now, I know big tech can censor who they want because they're private companies, so it's not technically not censorship, but it's worrying that you're only getting a very limited viewpoint.
It's just the pendulum swings one way, and that's the way we stay, you know, because everyone's afraid.
It's just the official sage day. I think we should, science is not settled, so we shouldn't censor other people's opinions, other scientists.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's it. Like, you know, have a debate rather than just like, this is the law now, that's it.
I mean, to give an example, I think the WHO have changed their mind continuously about face masks. So even they don't, they're like the official of the official. So even they're not sure sometimes.
I just had like a silly joke about the mask thing. Before the lockdown, basically everyone's saying that they care about and say, look after other people, you know, protect everyone, you know. And it's like, look, I try to, like, if I know you, I care about you. If I don't know you, you don't give a shit about me. I don't give a shit about you. Like, you know, I've walked down like escalators, you know, in London, right? And like there's people falling over, right? A granny's fallen over and like she's, you know, really just smashed herself on the floor, right? And they're like, I've seen people step over her and like, you know, and just on the way to where they need to get to. And then like, but the only difference is now with this pandemic is that people will see that same granny fall over and smash themselves on the pavement and then walk back and give that granny a kicking because she's not wearing a fucking mask. That's what it
is,
isn't it?
I've seen that. Some of the adverts and stuff like that, it's like divide and conquer sort of with the masks. Like I don't know what I'm saying, but I've seen like people who won't move out of the way for other people because of the social distancing and stuff. The adverts and the mask wearing has caused a lot more tension. I don't know about the adverts during I've seen some adverts which seem a little bit divisive in terms of you must wear a mask or make sure everyone else wears a mask. And what this caused is a little bit more tension among the public, among each other. So
that's another reason to hate each other. That's
exactly.
Great.
100%. I couldn't put it better. So.
That's it. You can have that.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
No, mate, Don, it's great. Thanks for coming on the podcast, man. But I'll ask you one thing before we kind of wrap up a little bit. With comedy, right, when you go up on stage, like I ask this question to everyone I have on the podcast. It's like, when you go on stage, do you have or did you have a model? Like you go up there as a type of a job, could be an animal, a being, anything. It's a hard question. Take your time. What do you think?
So,
for example, Sean Mio, right, goes up there and says he's like a gunslinger, a gun for hire. When you go up on stage, is there a thing that you see yourself as? I've had IT technician. I've had PCSO. So you can choose whatever you like, mate.
Oh, that's a very good question. I don't want to...
no rush, mate. You could take your time.
Sure, may as well. But yeah, like... My I don't know. It'll be something like a gun thing. It's like very relentless because I just do gag after gag after gag after gag. So it'll be something like, I don't know, like a tennis player maybe.
Okay,
like
cool.
A really fast tennis player. Like so it's just really fast paced. So they've got no time to breathe. So they laugh at that and hopefully they can laugh at the next one. If they don't laugh at the next one, go on to the next one straight away. So it's relentless. So it's something like a tennis player.
Great.
Just relentless.
And a tennis player that smashes every ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they've got no time to breathe because if it starts to get slow and boring, they'll just switch off. So that's one of the advantages and sometimes disadvantage of doing one-liners. You can just hit them straight away.
That's it. And relentless, non-stop. I like it. The first show you did, what was it called? Edinburgh?
Left-wing conspiracy theorists with dyspraxia.
Right. Left-wing conspiracy theorists with dyspraxia. And there's number two is coming out soon.
Well, I've done a work in progress in number two.
Oh, great.
I'm just going to call it the same title because it's a different festival. It's not Edinburgh. I'm applying for the Guildford Fringe. Same title. We're just going to... I might add pandemic in the title or something just to sell more tickets.
Yeah.
If I can sell tickets and just, you know, just to... it just tells you what where I am politically, and so people will come to the show because no one knows who I am. So if I say left-wing conspiracy theorist talks about pandemic, then they have a sort of idea what I'm going to talk about.
That's great, man. And where can we find you, Don?
You can find me at Don Biswas Comedy on Twitter. Go on to www.donbiswascomedy.com. So that's B-I-S-W-A-S, like Tiz was. Those are the two best places. Or follow me at Don Biswas Comedy on TikTok or Instagram.
Great. Well, Don, it was a pleasure talking to you for the last hour, man.
And, thanks very much for having us.
I'll hopefully see you at the Guildford Fringe if that's happening, man. Hopefully it is.
Fingers crossed, yeah. I think it will happen either way, whether it'll be online or hopefully it'll happen like in physical form in real life instead of online. We shall see.
Fingers crossed, man. Don, thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
And that was episode 107 with the excellent comedian and TikToker, Don Biswas. You can find him on Instagram and TikTok as Don Biswas Comedy. That's spelt D-O-N-B-I-S-W-A-S Comedy. So go and check him out. If you ever see him on a bill live, go and see him. He's an excellent joke writer. I've had him close my gigs many times and he has never disappointed. He is booked by his agent, Adam Rushton, or you could probably contact him on social media and book him that way too. He's an excellent comedian. He's been going about 15 years and you will not be disappointed. He is just such a great person to have on a bill. A lovely fella to be around as well when you're gigging. And so look, go and check him out. Go and check his stuff out and look at all his YouTube stuff, but go and see him live. That's where comedy really lives. All right. You can find us also, we're on Instagram at Winter Dominus. That's WinterDominus. And you can also find us on Facebook. We have a page. You can like that. You can also join the Facebook group as well. And look, if you like this podcast enough and you want to donate, buy me a coffee. I can buy my own coffee already, but you can go to Patreon, type in The Comedy Defect Podcast and donate as little or as much as you feel this podcast is worth. If you can't donate, that's all right. Just tell your friends about your favorite episode and there are some excellent ones coming up in the future. For December's episode, we've got another excellent comedian. He has been on the circuit for over 30 years. He received a Lifetime Achievement Award from his peers. It is, of course, Otis Cannelloni. Otis has closed for my clubs many times. He's bulletproof. He's so bookable. And he's a lovely guy to spend an hour or so with on this podcast. And that's for December's episode. And as I said, there were some nuggets of information in this episode we just heard with Don. And he said, look, just do it without thinking about it. Look, that's excellent advice for comedy. Just go for it. Have passion. Enjoy it. Just jump into the breach and see what happens, because it's going to be terrible at the beginning. You just don't know how terrible it is. And, you know, you just slowly, slowly get better. You know, that's what happens. You just keep gigging. Just keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, that's really great advice for life. Just keep going. Don't stop. Don't ever stop. You know, think about it a little bit. You know, if it's really dangerous, think about it. But, you know, if it's you're not really going to be hurt, maybe a little bit of a bruised ego, that's OK. Just keep going. And look, as I say, you can find Don everywhere on the socials, Instagram, TikTok. He's there. Don Biswas Comedy. I spelt it earlier. Go find it there. You can find us on Instagram at Winter Dominus, Winter Phonander, if you want to go deep dive on who I am and all that stuff. But yeah, it was a great episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you liked it, share it. If you didn't, that's fine too. Look, there's other episodes coming that you will certainly get a lot out of. So that was it for 107. Next month, we've got Otis Cannelloni, 30 years on the circuit, for episode 108. See you then.